produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 425. John Anderson and the Warriors, the Lost Demos EP, with Dave Watkinson.
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 425 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulright, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a little bit. Please do get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site yesmusicpodcast.com. As John Lennon once sang, strange days indeed. However, we aim for a little bit of normality here on the YMP. This week, Mark and I caught up with Dave Watkinson and had a great time talking about his debut as record producer. John Anderson and the Warriors, the Lost Demos EP, is out on 7-inch vinyl now from Plain Groovy Records, and you can get your copy, if you're quick, at burningshed.com. Before that fascinating conversation, however, a quick recap on some of the most interesting non-virus-related news from around the interwebs this week. On the YMP Facebook page, Dave Fagan posted about the veteran broadcaster Johnny Walker speaking to the veteran guitarist Steve Howe in the BBC's Sounds of the 70s, and John Kirkman shared the first view of his brand new Tales from Photographic Ocean's book. The aforementioned Dave Watkinson posted a photo of various Yes members' cars outside Rack Studios in London, my spiritual home, from 1978, when guess which album was being worked on? Tomato. Dave also added some brilliant concert tickets and photos from Blackpool and Manchester in the early 80s. Uncle Preston Frazier was back with his epic review series, and he's reached Soft as a Dove from Magnification. He reckons it's another classic effort from John Anderson and Steve Howe. I added a wonderful video from Peter Greenwood, where he practices Chris Squire's bass solo from Ritual, and the first proper excerpt from Rick Wakeman's new prog record, The Red Planet, has surfaced on YouTube. Frankly, I think it's quite brilliant, and the most exciting release of new music for a long time. Nobody plays a Moog solo like Rick, and I can also hear a lot of Chris Squire-influenced bass playing by friend of the podcast Lee Pomeroy. I have a feeling we're going to be spoiled by this album. In the visitor posts, Jeffrey Mason was back as usual. In a massive list, he contributed an update from Steve Howe about his forthcoming solo record Love Is, the Howe interview on Johnny Walker's show, the 11 best prog albums according to Jeff Downes, Wakeman's live portraits on YouTube, a photo I can't say I understand, I think it's a Star Trek meme, the Sky Arts production which claims to detail the true origins of progressive rock, the performance at the Marquee Club by 123, later known as Clouds, on which Yes's version of America is based. That's an amazing listen. Continuing the theme, a recording of The Nice featuring a young Keith Emerson playing a different kind of America tune. The 40 Greatest Yes Songs Ever, as decided by readers of Prog magazine, arguably a bit of a self-selecting group, but why not? One of the slew of recent John Anderson YouTube releases, this time it's For You, For Me from Song of Seven, a fabulous song. His latest purchase, Mraz and Bruford's Temples of Joy, ClassicRockHistory.com's Top 10 Yes Albums, and a review of the Cross Banks album. Oh my goodness. Joining in the fun were Brian Sullivan with the YouTube clip of Steve Howe with Les Paul, and Tony Handley not getting his hands on the Dave Watkinson single because his wife won't let him at it for 2 days in case of virus contamination. Over on Twitter, I added a few pictures of the kind gift Dave Watkinson, it's him again, sent me, an 8-track of Tomato. It's a version I hadn't seen before and wasn't on Discogs, so that was great. Thank you to Kevin Henry and Topographic Tunes for their very kind words, and Paul Smith added some fantastic photos from his own collection of concert shots. It was lovely to receive this voicemail from Jimmy Kirk.
Hey, thank you for the Yes Music Podcast. I've been following Yes since I've been 18. I'm 67 years old. Again, thank you.
Great to hear from such a long-standing Yes fan, so thanks very much, Jimmy. So, as always, thank you so much to everyone who's been in touch in any way this week, including last week's show notes commenters, Scott Goodall, Guy de Rome, Bob Martellotta, Dave Watkinson, Damian Kelly and John Thompson.
This is Miguel Falcón at miguelbass.com. You are listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Established in 2011, this is Two Fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band.
Well, it's delightful to have Dave Watkinson back with us, and I no longer can call him just the Yes Book author. I have to call him a record producer as well. So welcome back, Dave.
Hi, good to be back.
And welcome to Mark as well.
Greetings, fellows. How are you all doing?
Not too badly, thank you, in this very strange time we find ourselves in.
Yeah.
So we're talking to Dave about John Anderson and the Warriors, the Lost Demos EP, which I'm delighted to say that I've got a copy of in my hand here. And do keep listening at the end of the interview for a chance to win this copy, which you can have. I'll send it to you if you manage to answer Dave's question, which we'll come to in a minute. But anyway, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 songs on this Lost Demos EP, and we'd love to hear all about it from Dave. So, Mark, why don't you take us away?
So I'd like to start off with probably the most obvious question, which is, where did you discover these recordings?
This came about 4 years ago or something like that, when I found the first three tracks on there on an acetate, and that came up in an auction in the UK. I tend to search for everything, as you know, and I bid enough to get and win this item. I could have lost it and would have not gone anywhere, but I happened to win the item. And then because I won the item, it was I could ask the auctioneers where it came from, and so they explained that it came from sort of the Liverpool area with an old musician, and these stories get a little bit hazy as they go 50 years back, that someone, you know, got this, passed it to him, it's been in his loft forever, and he put it up for sale, he needed some money, I paid quite a lot of money for it. And that's how I got that into my possession, and then thought, what do I do with it? And I realized that with three tracks, should there be anything on it? Because I had no idea being an acetate. And then I thought, well, I wonder if there's anything else out there that needs discovering. So that was how it started.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, the best way to find out more about these is, of course, to buy your wonderful book, John Anderson and the Warriors, The Road to Yes, which is basically a complete encyclopedia of the band and John's role in it and the whole journey to find out some of these answers. But do you know where that acetate was recorded? And do you know where the things on the not the B-side, the double A-side were recorded?
No, there's no other information on, you know, that how that came about, where that was from in sort of originally, you know. I don't know where that sort of turned up, but other than anything else that's in my book, I don't know the recording studios or whatever. With an acetate, it's an interesting thing. You have to be very careful what to do with them. So it sat with me for a year because I didn't know what to do until I found some more.
Some of these songs sound sonically better than others. For example, The Dollhouse is Empty sounds much better than, let's say, Summer Girl. I'm guessing that's probably down to the sources. You did mention that you had some acetate. Did you also happen to find any like analog two-track tape? Like, were some of these songs from different sources?
Yeah, these were, this compiled from three different sources. So the first three tracks, the record kind of goes from the lower quality up to the better quality, I think you'll agree, as you as you work your way through. And that's the way I've done it. Well, ironically, it is the order as well of the material. So the first are on the acetate, which is really poor condition, which had not been played for 50 years, but was very bad, scratched, dented, it stopped. in the middle of these things. It was muffled. It was, so, you know, that's that, at that point, that's what I found, if there was anything on there. The next one, as they work through, they're separate acetates, like the Doll's House Is Empty is another acetate, Run To Me is another one, and then we go to She's Gone, which is instrumental and vocals. That's on a reel-to-reel tape.
So She's Gone is the best sounding recording of the bunch, obviously. Was that the last known recording that they made? And did they, and also they did the dreaded Beatles stereo mix where the bass and drums were on one side and the keys and guitars were on the other side. Was this the only attempt at this kind of a stereo version of their songs?
That's all I could find. That is the last they did. That's within a month of, you know, like a finishing. As a band, that's the final thing, the only one available. Well, I quite like that silly, strange sound.
Yes, indeed.
We're so used to now, and the production now, and we really have to. When you listen, you have to go back and put yourself into that time, and you know, I'm doing this at three in the morning in Germany while the drunken. And all the rest of it.
Yeah. I did notice a big difference when Brian Chatton, who's someone you know very well, I understand, Dave, when he joins, and his keyboard playing on She's Gone is actually fantastic, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yeah. He hasn't told me what he thinks yet, but I'm sure he will. We spoke at length this week in California. But yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's super. What a changed band when they got that sound in. I think it's changed as each person has come and gone. But he's like his character. You know, the organ playing is fantastic in that. And, you know, vibrant, fun. You know, it's really great. And I'm very lucky we got that sound out of the 50-year-old tape. And
yeah,
which, if you understand the process of it, I didn't have to cook either. I didn't have to bake.
Really?
I was astounded.
That's unbelievable, because I have quite a few acetates of my own. And, you know, the acetates, we're always told to be very careful of. They have limited amount of times you can actually play them before they start degenerating. And that's probably what's happened with the ones that you had. But, you know, analog tape holds a lot better over time, which is probably why the analog stuff that you have on tape sounds so fantastic.
Yes, well, the first three tracks are a needle drop, as you call it. So a first needle drop and only needle drop without any cleaning. This was in Abbey Road. I chose Abbey Road just because the hell of it, really. I paid a lot more money to do it there, but I just wanted to go and make it in the road, frankly. And it looks cool on the back of this. But I wanted to go in there, which I did. So, but that was a needle drop. I mean, that was no clean, one drop. And then whatever came off that, we had to work with. That's why they're really poor, but, yeah, well, you know, they've come out a lot, you know, from where it started. Yeah, and the She's Gone, obviously, that's a reel-to-reel. But it had no displacement of the tape. It hadn't split, and it hadn't, you know, technically moved, or the liquid's changed, the coating's changed.
That's a bit about how you technically got them from the state they were in to this wonderful EP. What about any red tape? What did you have to go through to actually release these songs in terms of copyright and publishing and all that?
Yeah, all this was fresh to me as well, and I had to work my way through the whole system of that. So when I eventually, over a couple of years, managed to get the material, then I had to figure out, because these were just songs on various things, but I didn't know really maybe who wrote them, who originated them, who owned copyright, etc. So that took quite a while of digging to find, first of all, what the song was, because it, like yourself, when you just heard it, you probably never heard it before either.
No.
I'd never heard it either. So then I had to think, well, who wrote this? So then I had to go through that process of finding them all. And it was a joy when I actually ticked the last box of finding, you know, who wrote these, who publishes, which is a key thing. That was the whole new process. But, you know, I've managed to do that. The PRS, it's all been done, paid for. Yeah, a very interesting process. Don't recommend it.
No. You were working with Plain Groovy Records, is that right?
Well, I did all of this to get to the final production of the songs and master them and clean them up to the best of my ability to have them ready for the next stage. And along my journey, he's local to me as well in Sussex in England. I got speaking to Plain Groovy, Chris Topham there. And he was always very helpful because I was a new boy. I was asking him lots of questions and picking his brain. Keep ringing him up. Yeah. What do I do now? What do we need? Who needs this? Who needs what? How do I? So he was very helpful. And then we caught up. And he's great on the vinyl. So my dream was always to have a 7-inch vinyl. Yeah. Well, it's all exactly, you know. And it's a great company, superb product.
Just before we go on to other things, tell us about the catalogue number you've used. So it's Elias 90127. How did you come up with that number?
Tell me, that's good, isn't it?
Yes, I like that. But for those who don't instantly understand, go through for us what that's about.
Oh, right. Of course everyone understands. We have a lot of geeks listening. We all get that. Anyway, I love Elias. I love John Anderson stuff. And, of course, yeah. I created it also. I get to pick the catalogue number. So I thought I'll put a bit of Elias in there. And what's the only thing we can really advance on the catalogue number is a slight advance on 90125. So
yeah.
It's purely artistic license you're looking at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about the technical ends, but let's talk a little bit about the songs themselves. For most of these songs, certainly on side A, to me it sounds like John is the backing singer on these, and he's actually quite recognizable, actually. I'm assuming that John's brother Tony is the lead singer on side A, and then John is on the side double A?
Yeah, that's how that works. And you can hear John in the background, cutting through, you know, I think the better production equipment you've got there, you'll hear him cutting through. And and then obviously moving on, then he's definitely the lead singer in that lower tone as well. As you've seen in the videos on YouTube, is in that sort of lower tone, but taking the helm well.
Absolutely. So when you combine that with when he gets as far as Chris Squire, and vocal harmony is very obviously important, even at this stage, to John. And he seems to be able to sing those lower parts with ease, actually. So this is presumably the origins of the Yes Choir, basically. As I say, when Chris Squire, who was the choir boy of the group, came in, then you know, John was already very experienced in singing parts.
I mean, the history of John is that harmonizing, isn't it? He's absolutely loved it. To find Chris, it must have been wonderful to find Chris Squire, who could do that and replace. Well, everyone was good in it in the band, I thought, in the Warriors, but it took it to another level, really, with Chris's singing.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's interesting, I really enjoyed listening to this, by the way, and I was listening to it on headphones a lot and really got immersed in it and found it really enjoyable. Well, one thing I was found very interesting is that the band sounds like it was very influenced by American rock and roll, like the Beach Boys, and obviously there's a cover version of the Everly Brothers on here as well. So how popular was American music in the UK back then, particularly in the north of England?
Well, definitely in the north of England, you know, Liverpool, and that's where the port is, straight from America. So everything used to come right into the Liverpool port and just go eastwards across the country, which is Manchester, Liverpool, and then Leeds. All the influences came from across there, and massively in Germany when it went over there. They were listening to whatever would come in if you place yourself, you know, back in 64, 65. I think it's that you can just listen to anything, really, and try and play it as well.
So, Dave, sales of your EP have gone rather well, haven't they? Is there any point in directing listeners to a place where they can actually buy this?
Yeah, well, they're not sold out. They're not sold out yet, but I think it's a superb product, and it is an eye opener. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I've had no feedbacks, but yeah, of course it is. Yeah, it's only available. We did an exclusive with Man and Jed on this. I've only just got the updates that there are not that many left, but there are still some. So you need to definitely get it. And there's no sign of reprinting it, by the way. It's a collectible. You know me with my collectibles. I've created collectibles with the book and the single. You need to get it while you can. And you get the download as well, of course, with it. If you haven't got a record player, and a lot of people haven't, just put it in the frame and stick it on the wall and then play the download.
With that said, there, like you said, there is a digital download included with the vinyl version, but will we see the EP in any different formats? For example, like a CD in the future, or is this just strictly going to be like a 7-inch release and that's it?
Well, up until only a week ago, this was it. My dream was to have it exactly as you see it, and designed and cover and vinyl. That was it for me. But someone suggested, why don't you do a limited number on CD? So I'm kind of wondering whether that's a way to go. You obviously brought that up. You think that's a good idea? Maybe.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I mean, there's the thing about a band like the Warriors is that they come around, don't they? And, you know, interest is stimulated again and again. And when I first talked to you about them, I got hold of the live CD that existed then. So I think it's always going to be really interesting, especially to Yes fans. These songs that you found, so perhaps there is some mileage in CD,
and not to mention also that you can expand more on a booklet for the CD. You can add more information, maybe put a little story, maybe get some quotes from some of the surviving members. You know, you can do more with the booklet on a CD than you can with a 7-inch.
Yeah, you squeeze a little bit in there, don't you, on a 7-inch? That is true. It sounds like you're giving me another project now, which I am bereft of a project. these things take so long, but that wouldn't be that difficult to do as when I've got everything now. So, although I can add that if you read the book and if you get to the back and you look at all the various records, what music that they tried to produce or did produce, and it's on a single, Lost. There's probably 7 or 8 tracks that I can't find that may or may not be out there. It could all be thrown away, or it could be somewhere. So you never know. There could be a part 2 if it was ever found.
Yeah. Okay, well, as it stands, it's a wonderful collection. And we do have, as I said at the beginning, a copy of the EP to give away to one lucky listener, as they say. I used to say back in the 70s, maybe. So, Dave, you're going to give us a question for this little competition.
Yes, which band did John play in Germany before he ventured into and Maple Greer's?
Okay, so answers on a postcard. No, I won't go down that avenue. So you want to send your answer to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, then I'll get Dave to choose one of those people at random who get the answer correct, and you can have this very almost unique copy as the stocks are dwindling so much. All right, so thank you very much indeed, Dave, for coming and telling us about that. I know that the paperback version of your wonderful John Anderson and the Warriors, The Road to Yes book is now approaching, if not actually out, so you can get hold of that, that's for sure. And as I say, I've got your very limited edition orange vinyl version of this coming to me, and another one of these. So brilliant stuff. Thank you very much indeed, Dave.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. Thanks.
You're welcome.
whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.
Just before we go, here's half of the patrons. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. And as I say, half the patrons are Aaron Steelman, Bob Martellotta, Brian Sullivan, Chris Bandini, Craig Estenes, Dave Owen, Dave Hayden, Lind, David Pannell, Dave Watkinson, Dem, Doug Curran, Fergus Cubbage, Fred Barringer, Jeff Bailey, Jeffrey Mason, Guy de Rome, Henrik Antonsen, H.B. Peterson, Ian N.B., Jamie McQuinn, Ken Fuller, Michael Handahan, Jim, John Cowan, John Holden, John Parry, John Thompson and Barry Gorski. Continued thanks to Robert and David. So thank you very much indeed to all those patrons. If you'd like to join them, keeping the lights on here at YMP Towers and supporting the show financially, then please go over to Patreon, patreon.com/YesMusicPodcast, or just click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. I do hope we'll be back next week, and do keep yourselves very safe in the meantime. You can always follow the show as well at Facebook, at Twitter, or at Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.